Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we had some seaside vibes out at Harbortown, our favorite lighthouse setting on the PGA Tour for the RBC Heritage. And we had a psychic reading in our picks for this past weekend's action. Plus, Lydia lighting up the LPGA and a Corn Ferry story from friends of the show. And more on our great partnership announcement with our friends at the First Tee, where you can give back to the future of the game of golf. Plus, we're tuned into soccer. Yes, some rare soccer talk on the Course of Life. And this week's guest is Korn Ferry Tour Pro Mark Baldwin. Great guy, fun background, and a lot of interesting stories about his adventures trying to get into these tournaments. Plus, we finish with a taste test and an indoor meal for the first time in a while when we hashtag always in with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Active Body. And Mike, just before we hopped on, I did it. It's my 2 o'clock workout. I do it 5 days a week. It's only 5 minutes a day. It's a really harmless way to keep yourself in shape. And I'm talking about the Active 5 unit by our friends at Active Body. We love them. I love how easy this is. I picked this up. You remember, Mike, what was that? This was about 14 months ago when the pandemic started. And I've kept the routine intact, so I enjoy my Active 5 unit. It's a great way to walk you through easy workouts that get you feeling fresh and ready to go and attack the day. Again, it's the Active 5 unit with Active Body. Our promo code is COL for 20% off yours today at activebody.com.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Groove to Golf, and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. Alex, before we get into everything, we're both now 100% vaccinated. So
congrats, boss.
Congrats. Yeah, we did it. We're here.
Exciting stuff. The finish line is within reach. And when we get to the end of this episode at our finish line, I'm going to talk to you about something that I've been just dying to do for a while that I've been waiting on this moment to happen.
Been a long time coming. But first, let's turn our attention to just up the road from me in Hilton Head, South Carolina, the RBC Heritage at Harbortown, with the lighthouse on the 18th green, and where a unlikely golfer whose name we spoke about briefly earlier this year
has claimed his third
plaid jacket, Stuart Sink, at 47 years old. Really, the Stuart Sink family, the entire family, won this week. I said we should be paying attention to him last week because he did really well at Augusta. He went down the road and just put on a clinic, really. I mean, a clinic.
Yeah, you were reading through the tarot cards last week and you pulled his name out of the hat. Now, listen, he had the nice week at Augusta, finished, I believe, 12th or 13th or something. It was a great treat to see him out there. So he was feeling good. And again, the form was there. You didn't quite think that Stuart Sink was going to be the type of guy coming out with 63-63 the week after the Masters, just completely lit the course on fire and just had to kind of be in cruise control for the weekend to hold on to the victory and never really even got touched. And shout out to our friends at the First Tee. I love the 9 core values. And the one that I want to bring up this week is confidence, Mike. He said going into this week, he played well at the Masters. He loved this venue. He's a ball striker that straightened out his driver. He said, there's no reason why I can't win this week. And sure enough, he got it done.
There you go. So now the question becomes, we have two-time winners on the PGA Tour this season, Stuart Sink now, and joining Bryson DeChambeau, beefy Bryson.
What a combo. So multiple winners there.
Who's going to win three this year?
I mean, obviously Stuart Sink's the pick here.
I have more confidence in Stuart Sink than I do in Bryson, because Stuart, I don't think, has the pressure to do it. And I think maybe that's also when you're 47, you're going to, you're just playing good golf. There's no real pressure on you to perform. Whereas Bryson, every week, it's like, what's he going to do?
And no one loves putting more pressure on themselves than Bryson as well.
Too. That's true.
Yeah, Stuart Sink is just such an anomaly, because you and I, he's been in our golf life and lexicon forever. Yeah. He's been on a tour since the 90s.
His first win on tour was when Colin Morikawa was born? Yes, was it that?
I love right? that.
Or was it that his first win at RBC Heritage? I'm forgetting which one it was. It was one or the other.
Nonetheless, so. It shows you how long he's been out there. I would argue that maybe Stuart Sink, as a golfer, has been balder longer than anyone else I know in the game of golf, too. Mm-hmm. We've just known him for a while. The bottom line is, unfortunately, he kind of gets a bad rap, Mike. And I remember bringing this up in his last win this past fall in Napa, is that, remember, the one major championship he has, he stole away the British Open from 59-year-old Tom Watson. People will always forget that moment and remember it as the moment that Tom Watson blew the British Open. In reality, that was Sink's one shining light for a major championship. But it's great to see him have this renaissance at this age. And you can just tell with his son in the bag, he's genuinely having fun out there. Yeah. And the emotion came out at the end.
You know, it's we've talked about it back with a lot on this podcast about how anyone can win on tour any given week. You don't need to be beefed up Bryson. You don't need to be young gun Colin Morikawa. You can play the golf of your life at any time. And Stuart Sink is showing that right now. And it's okay. You can be 47, go out there, have a good time. You don't need to bomb the ball 350 yards. And that's what makes this game so great. That's what I love about this.
Clinic. So shout out to Stewie Sink getting that third tarpon jacket there at Harveytown. Yeah. Great job to him.
And he will be driving it off with the cannons next year.
Yes.
Like they do every year to start. Let's talk about some other key things that came out of Harbortown. Let's start with one of your other picks, Cam Smith. How'd he do?
He had a good week. The mullet's been rocking for the last few months now. So I've been a big fan of the hair as well as his golf game in recent. Had a decent showing at Augusta. And I thought he would be a good play this past week. He was my best finish. I think T5 was his finishing point at the end of the week. So definitely a guy that's going to be on my radar for the next few weeks here. Could even be to watch this week in team competition as well, too, with the Zurich. So, I would say don't give up on that best pick I had. My picks are at Course of Life 1 on Twitter Weekly. You're at MWRINC on Wednesday night. We'll throw our picks up for this upcoming week. But definitely keep Cam Smith on your short list for the immediate future.
Yep. A couple other names throw up there. Cam Smith had that 66 on Sunday. So did Shane Lowry. So did Dustin Johnson.
That's right.
So did Harold Varner III. Harold Varner will be in New Orleans. So we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. And let's talk about how long you can stand over a putt. Let's talk about that.
Yes,
too.
Thank you for bringing
that
up.
That came to a head here, and it involved everyone's, at least our favorite golfer to hate now, Matt Kuchar.
Right. It's a very interesting scenario because we find ourselves agreeing with Matt Kuchar on an issue with a rules official, which is very rare. So essentially for the 30-second rundown for people who didn't see it, Siwoo Kim was playing alongside Kuchar and had a putt go up to the edge of the hole, and it stopped right there, but it kind of didn't stop. Everyone kind of gathered around the hole. You're entitled 10 seconds to wait to see if the ball does eventually drop in the hole.
Yeah, 10 seconds after you approach the ball, and your approach to the ball needs to be a reasonable amount of time.
Which it was. Unfortunately, these guys said, oh, the ball's still moving even after the 10-second period. So they didn't want to touch it because they figured you couldn't touch a moving ball. Nonetheless, the ball falls in the hole after the 10-second mark. Everyone consults. Cooch actually goes to bat for his playing partner, Siwoo Kim, explaining that the ball was moving. And yet the rules official lays down the ruling. It doesn't matter. He went beyond the time frame in which he needed to hit the next shot. So technically, he had to take another stroke on that hole for a ball he didn't even hit that ended up falling in the hole. Just another strange rule in the game of golf.
Yeah, it's, I agree with Kuchar, but in a tournament setting, no good. Yeah, you got it. And just tap the ball.
It's a frustrating rule, that 10-second thing. And I can see where they're coming from, because in theory, you would think, and you're seeing this ball potentially topple over and oscillate 1 millimeter at a time towards the cup, you would think not to hit it. But unfortunately, that does go against the actual nature of that 10-second rule they put in play. So just a really strange thing that occurred on golf social media. A lot of people were confused about that ruling. You can check it out on the tour's Instagram, and I retweeted it as well. But just another oddity in our wonderful game.
Yeah. It's just the fun things of golf. It's it's just like that. Who was it? Didn't think he pulled his club back and hit sand when he was pulling his club back in the bunker.
Abraham Answer got called out on that.
And that same thing. There's a bit to me here that I'm starting to notice that I'm struggling with in that kind of penalty is intent.
The intent part
is was there intent
forever in this great game of golf?
Yeah, we will. Just another thing for us to talk about every week. Let's talk about the Corn Ferry Tour, because we like our guys out there. And they were in Vegas. And a past guest, Ryan French, Monday Q Info guy, was caddying for Mark Baldwin. And made the cut.
They did. They made the weekend. This was an interesting little scenario. And we're going to play this out in our interview with Mark a little later in the episode as well. But, you know, there's guys who just kind of live on the edge and don't know if they're going to get into the fields of these tournaments. And Mark was in that position, being just outside of the field. You know, you're waiting around on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe hoping a player accidentally stumbles and hurts their ankle and all of a sudden pulls out of the tournament so you can get in. You know, just little things like that. But whatever it takes to get in the tournament, nonetheless, they had a ball out there. Ryan was there to be on the bag for him, and it was cool to see them make the weekend. And like I said, in this upcoming interview this week, you're going to hear a lot of perspective on what it's like to be on the edge of these fields and how those weeks play out. But good to see those guys play through the Vegas win and make the weekend.
Yeah. Also, it was a really fun week out in Hawaii. Lydia Ko, who, if you remember, when she came on the LPGA tour scene, just scorched everyone.
Yes.
It's crazy what she does. She won 14 times in her first 81 starts, including twice as an amateur. And then she went quiet for three years. And, you know, we all knew she was coming for something because she shot a 62 to end the ANA inspiration last week. And then she just continued that ball striking clinic and just torched everything. Final round 65 on Saturday, 28 under par. Seven shots ahead of everyone to win this past week. Just a lot of people coming back to the winner's circle right now.
Yeah, return visits. You know, we're comparing the Spieth win at Valero to this win for Lydia Ko as well, too. Kind of similar thing. Players who shot onto the scene at a very young age, had a bit of a drought and had to work through some kinks with their game, both physically and mentally, and have now come back to great form. It's great to see Lydia Ko in that spot. And again, just hearing those numbers you mentioned, she was some gaudy stat, like 30 something under par in like her last five rounds. These are just zones and levels of golf and levels of under par that we just can't even comprehend. No. I really can't even like put that into thoughts as to how amazingly on fire she's been recently, but shout out to her for just an absolutely dominant performance in a beautiful place too. It's always nice to win in Hawaii.
Just fantastic. And all of these players returning to the winner's circle right now just makes me want to go out and play more. And also get other people to go out there and play, which is what we're doing now with our partnership with the First Tee.
Yes, it is. I'm very excited to give the update as well, too. We've been talking about this the last couple of weeks, but officially by the time you guys are listening to this site, you can head to the First Tee Austin site. It's firstteeaustin.org/partners. You can also do firstteeaustin.org/donate, and you'll see our logo, and that's the exact spot where you can give back to the First Tee. So I would encourage everyone to check out their YouTube videos and their website as well to see everything that they're doing to grow the game. If you don't already know everything that the First Tee does, I would encourage you to get informed. And we're going to inform you here on the podcast, not only with the nine core values, but we're going to be doing some content. I'm going to be heading to the campus in the next month or two, maybe highlight some of their kids' camps as well. So excited that we got the link up and running and looking forward to getting rolling with our friends.
It's going to be great. Let's turn our attention to New Orleans, where it is the Zurich Classic at TPC Louisiana. Hey, it's Team Golf is back. We're going to do two rounds of best ball foursome, four ball. And we're going to do two rounds of foursomes with alternate shot. So we got teams. We got walk-up music, right? We do walk-up music at the Zurich Classic.
Yes, I hope it's pretty aggressive. I'm always interested in the song choices. There's been caddies that have sung before for their players as well, too. So anything goes on the First Tee. It might be one of the coolest moments of the year on the PGA Tour. The PGA Tour doesn't always give off the like coolest vibe or brand week to week.
Yeah.
But this is a good cool moment for both.
Yeah, this is just a fun weekend. This is just like in Austin where we have the match play. This is just another way to enjoy golf and kind of change it up a little bit and get a little bit of that team atmosphere going, which is, you know, what we love about the Ryder Cup when it happens every year. So we got some great pairings, some great teams going on out there. We got Matthew Wolf and Colin Morikawa on one team.
A couple young guns right there. It's going to be hard to avoid them.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay are playing together. Scottie Scheffler and Bubba Watson are a team together. It's just, I mean, It's going to be a fun weekend.
It is.
It's going to be fun.
How about a couple of bombers, Cameron Champ and Tony Finau? Now, if we're just discounting accuracy or short game or anything like that, this is the team to beat right here because they are going to be blowing it past everybody off the tee. So I'm looking forward to seeing bombs from that team. A couple other guys on my list. It's hard to avoid, obviously, Ryan Palmer and John Rahm. They've won this tournament before. Not like kind of the most likely pairing that you would see, but nonetheless, they got together and got it done. And then I mentioned Cam Smith as well, too. Him and Mark Leishman paired up a couple of Australians that have been in decent form. So, yeah, there's definitely a good selection of teams here. I will say that historically speaking, the teams that win this usually kind of come from random. There's usually not a ton of rhyme or reason to who wins this tournament. So I think I might go off the board with a few of my picks as well this week.
So then if we're going off the board here, we got to look at Harold Vollner III, who's been playing really well. He's teamed up with Brandon Grace. So,
okay. All right. Well, there's your winner. Based on what happened last week, there's your winner right there.
Just another team that I think would be interesting to see win would be Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Schwartzel. I mean,
yes, like that. Team South Africa.
I actually like that pairing.
Yeah. Love it. Okay, cool. So Zurich, New Orleans, going to be a fun weekend. Team golf, nice little wrinkle just to mix it up from what we see in the monotony of stroke play week to week. You know, I love what I see with match play and bringing these new formats. Like you said, it can only help the viewing experience. So looking forward to the action.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Let's turn over to Tuned In and share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. For me this past week, I wasn't really watching much. I traveled. I stayed in a hotel for a night for work. So that was interesting to do these days. No Bible or any reading material in your hotel room anymore.
Wow,
so.
Shocking. Jeez. Man, I know you're really looking forward to that.
I'm not going to get into that right now, but I know you were watching something, Alex.
Yeah, I was soccer, which is pretty shocking. And not something I ever think I lead Tuned In with on the course of life.
It's football.
It is. Yes. I need to learn that. It's the Austin Football Club, Austin FC, officially making their MLS Major League Soccer debut this past weekend. Mike's franchise has been in the works for a few years here. They've been building the stadium from the ground up for 20,000 to be in there when the time is right. It's literally 5 minutes from my front door. It's right down the street. So I'm super pumped to be a part of the action.
Season tickets? You got season tickets?
I do not have season tickets yet, but I'm getting my hands on a few individual game passes for later this summer. The first home game's not till June, but they got things going last Saturday. Matthew McConaughey, all right, all right, all right. But all right, soccer all right, all right. Was not all right, all right, all right. 2-0 lost to Will Ferrell's LAFC in their opener. But it's a long way to go. We're an expansion team. These things don't happen overnight. But the buzz is here. And I got to say, it's nice to be a part of just a brand new blank slate pro sports franchise. It's something new in my life. So I'm appreciating that.
Yeah, you know, here in Georgia, we have the Atlanta United. They're pretty good. So
they are. I think they won a cup in the last year or two as well, too.
I think they did. You know, that's how much I pay attention to.
Yeah, we're talking soccer here, just like we always do. Yeah.
I guess, you know, we just thinking back to what was said back when we did this in college, that golf is for the French. So here we are. We're talking soccer.
Yes, we are. We've come full circle from our college radio caller in 2006. Yep. And life is really coming at you fast when that happens. But really again, it's nice to have soccer back in my life, something I haven't really even revisited since my youth soccer days. So I'm trying to latch on to this team. If they start out of the gate like 0-6, Mike, this is going to be really tough for me to keep this fandom throughout the summer and the first season. Mm. But I'm hoping they can give me a little life here in the next few weeks.
Looking forward to it. All right, let's get into this week's guest. Alex, you had a chance to talk with a Korn Ferry Pro from our home neck of the woods, actually from my home state of New Hampshire. I couldn't be more excited here. Mark Baldwin, he's great on Twitter. He's got a lot of game. And like we said earlier, he made the cut this past week at the Korn Ferry Tour in Vegas.
So. Exactly. And we did touch on New Hampshire golf. So I got a nice New Hampshire golf.
There's a lot of great golf up there. I mean, there's a lot of good golf up there.
We talked about his past experience where he met his wife. Funny story there. And just life on the edge, Mike. He has some crazy stories from the recent Korn Ferry tournaments. I mean, nobody has weirder travel hours than Mark Baldwin. And he showcases it all with us. This is a fun conversation.
Can't wait to hear it. But first, as always, this interview is brought to you by our friends at Desert Fox Golf. makers of the Phone Caddy.
Yes.
The Desert Fox team is based in Arizona, so they know golf, and the Phone Caddy is crafted by both golfers and engineers. The Phone Caddy is unique because it mounts right onto the golf cart in seconds, and a place where you can actually see and use your phone right there on that post right in front of you. So you can keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy from Desert Fox. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with almost any phone model and quickly becomes a talk of your foursome. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your Phone Caddy, and don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up on the tee, originally from the Granite State of New Hampshire, we have a pro golfer that brings a refreshingly honest take to the game on social media, especially Twitter, and is living on the edge on the Korn Ferry Tour right now. It's Mark Baldwin joining the Course of Life. Mark, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great, Alex. Thanks so much for having me. I love that intro, living on the edge and from the Granite State. I wish that they would use that on the first tee before I tee off. I think that would go a long way with the fans.
It would. We'll get you into the Zurich Classic, hopefully, in the next few years, and you can play that as your walk-up song. Sound like
perfect. Original.
Awesome. Yeah. So I originally found you, like I mentioned, I found you on Twitter before I got to know the golfer, and I got to know the guy first. It's at Mark Baldwin One for anyone who wants to follow. I'm just curious, in terms of just Twitter and social media as it connects to your career, you've been playing for a while, but tell me like kind of what you remember about first hopping on to Twitter. I see you joined in 2009. So you're an old school member.
Yeah. I think I joined really early on in the platform, and I actually joined for, kind of a business endeavor. I had taken a little bit of time to work and make some money, as you do when you're playing pro golf. You inevitably, if you play long enough, reach the point where the sponsor money has dried up and you can't quite earn enough playing mini tour golf to fund, you know, Q school and all the, right. All the events that you need to. And so I had taken on a job, a marketing boutique gig. And so I joined originally, I believe, for that reason, to kind of further the goal of putting aside some money to get back into playing golf and simultaneously, playing pro golf and working on the just some various small little marketing projects. And I think at the time, if you took an account and you followed a different account, and it really like tremendously boosted the following of another account.
Yeah.
Right? There were so few accounts, it felt like then. It didn't feel like you could go viral at the time with anything you did. So it was very early days in the platform.
That's cool. Yeah, you've been around for a while, and I love seeing your perspective as your career has evolved as well on social media. It's cool to give fans that look into the honesty of what really goes into your career right now. In terms of your background, we have something a little bit in common. I'm originally from the Boston area. My co-host, he is from Merrimack, New Hampshire. I know you have New Hampshire roots. Tell me a little bit and tell our audience a little bit about Laconia, New Hampshire, where you grew up.
Let me preface that by saying I'm actually from Guilford, New Hampshire.
Okay.
Laconia happens to be where the majority of people who know a little something about New Hampshire have heard of Laconia.
Correct. The motorcycle rally, mainly, yeah.
Yes, because of the motorcycle rally, we have one of the biggest in the country. Bike Week, and it's on Lake Winnipesaukee there in Laconia. So I tell people that just because it's more of a point of reference, but there's actually quite a significant rivalry between Guilford and Laconia.
Love that.
Particularly in the high schools, we were always in different classes in high school, so we didn't often compete directly against each other. So it actually fueled the rivalry more because I think there was speculation like, you know, oh, we'd beat you if we played you in this, but we'd beat you if we. And so, yeah, it was a cutthroat rivalry a la, you know, Frazier Ali and the Sox and the Yankees.
Sounds like it, yeah.
But yeah, it's more of a point of reference. My mom did move to Laconia later in my high school life. And so there was some time in Laconia, but yeah, I'm more rooted in Guilford. And my dad is actually, he was from Merrimack and played for Merrimack Valley golf team. And so, you know, that would be an interesting conversation if your co-host was here, but they were always very tough at basketball.
Small world. Yeah. And myself and my co-host have played a lot of New Hampshire golf. I love New England golf. There's lots of cool New Hampshire courses I've played. Some of them, you know, divided halfway between New Hampshire and Maine. And I've played tree line courses with the tallest pines you'll see. For those who haven't been, kind of describe how you remember playing New Hampshire golf growing up and kind of what are the themes that resonate through the courses in the area that you remember?
New Hampshire golf is... You know, it's like hockey in Florida. I mean, it's a very small part of the year. And while it's a time of the year that everybody welcomes and absolutely cherishes, skiing and hockey are you know, longer seasons and I would say more probably popular sports.
Oh yeah,
We don't have a whole lot of high level golfers that come out of New Hampshire. We've had, you know, very few that have ever made it to the Corn Ferry Tour. Actually, only really one that I can think of, and that was Rich Parker. Rich Parker was recently the head golf coach for Dartmouth, and there are some legendary stories of Rich Parker and John Daly back in the day. And John Daly actually references Rich in his book My Life in and Out of the Rough. So what's strange is that Massachusetts actually and Rhode Island have some tour players. But New Hampshire never really was able to develop those for whatever reason. So I was very fortunate growing up that there was a lot of junior golfers just who happened to be my age that loved to play every day of the summer. And so when I think of junior golf, I think of, you know, just pristine days with my dad. And I think of just some really intense competition with some of my very best friends, even people who at the time I didn't think were my best friends because we were such intense competitors. And it felt like such a small place. You felt as a good junior golfer, you did feel like a big fish in a small pond.
Mm.
But playing on all those slopes and the mountainside golf that you play in New Hampshire, you don't have a lot of flat lies. You don't have a lot of flat putts. And I think that lends itself really well to being an athletic golfer, to being, you know, somebody who doesn't get caught up in the technical side of golf and somebody who just goes out and plays. My class, high school class, there have been some very high level players that have come out. But I do think that New Hampshire, if the season was a bit longer, would lend itself really well to cultivating a lot of talent. But the golf is a lot of fun and it's very different because you have such severe slopes that you're often playing up and down and your every shot is, you know, plus six or minus eight.
There definitely is that huge range and slope and lie and condition of every golf ball you come across when you're playing in New England golf
and
at all times.
Seasonal condition, you know, what you're playing in. And this is true of many places, but I think it's more exacerbated in New Hampshire with the early spring and then the late spring conditions. You're playing maybe the same golf course, but it doesn't in any way resemble the course that you played a month before.
Very interesting. Cool. Again, we're talking with Mark Baldwin. He's Mark Baldwin One on Twitter, professional golfer. That's a great follow on social media. And in terms of your career, in golf. You had a good college career at Notre Dame. I'm imagining you had some great kind of college experience in football Saturdays there. But in terms of actually becoming a professional golfer, was that something you immediately knew you wanted to do? I know you talked about the marketing venture that originally got you on social media. So was that an idea you toyed with, or were you all in on professional golf? What was that process like coming out of school for you?
Yeah, I don't know if I have any revisionist history in reflection on that, because when I think back to early on, I got off to a very hot start my freshman year, and then I went through probably the hardest year of golf of my life. I got to the conference championship, and I was on the last hole, the 72nd hole, and we needed a par to win the conference championship. We're on the tee, and my coach said, look, we just need a par here. You know, all you have to do is get in the fairway, get on the green, two putt, you've done a million times in your life, and we get out of here, we move on to regionals. I'm not going to tell you what to hit, but all we need to make is par. And this is a pretty difficult hole, this 18th hole. It was about 440. It wound around an environmentally sensitive hazard, and it had a giant tree on the right side, just barely in the rough. And so really the play was like a 2-iron or a 3-wood out there, and then you'd hit 6 or 7 iron into the green. And where you'd hit driver to cut the corner was a very aggressive play that you might take if you were playing with your friends in a skins game, but you definitely don't do it when the entire season's on the line and you're holding a team on your back. I dismissed the coach's monologue, essentially that's what it became, entirely, and hit driver and hooked it left into the environmentally sensitive area, made double. We lose the conference championship by one shot. And so when I finished, he walked up and he didn't seem mad. He just said, I promise you will never snap hook it under pressure again. And for the next 4 months, he had changed my grip to what my head club pro called a gorilla grip, very strong. I played a low hook to an extremely weak grip where I couldn't keep the ball on the golf course. And if you ever went back and looked at my scores, they're embarrassing my sophomore year. And I didn't think that I was going to even continue to play by the end of my sophomore year.
Wow, so that was like a full breakdown and tear up for you in college, huh?
It was. Yeah, it really, you know, changed me as a player physically, but it more, you know, emotionally, mentally. And while what's interesting is that golf coach who changed everything left halfway through my junior year. And then once the new coach came in was when I started kind of playing well again and revitalized my college career and got me thinking about playing professionally. But the coach, in hindsight, the move that he made was so dramatic and disruptive, but so important to me as a player long term that I went back to him after college ended. And I was like, this guy, you know, really knew what he was doing. And he is to this day one of my very closest friends. And that was the original coach that recruited me at Notre Dame.
Nice.
And so I gradually just got better. And it was, he had left at the time, but it was really a result of the work that we put in after that complete debacle on the last hole of the conference championship.
Interesting. And so from there, that kind of gave you the launch you needed to decide you were going to go into a professional career. One of your highlights that we obviously have to get to, you've had wins, you've had great finishes, you've had amazing rounds. But the highlight of what golf has also brought you is you were able to meet your wife on the golf course. I want to hear about that specifically and when that happened. Did that actually happen at an event itself you're playing in, or was that just a random round of golf?
Yeah, so I was playing on the Canadian tour. And I was playing at Edmonton Country Club at the ATB TELUS Open.
Love it. Still remember the name.
Yep. And I was playing really well in the, it was the second round. I was playing really well. And, you know, you're just a little more jovial and chatty when you're playing well, especially if you're not a very mature player. And so I was talking up the scorekeeper a lot, and she was very knowledgeable about the game. She had a daughter who had missed getting her LPGA Tour card a couple of years earlier by a single shot. And we just had a really nice conversation. We got to the 11th hole on this course, and they've since rebuilt this green. But at the time, this green had a significant grade pitch. It's like a very, very steep slope in the green. And at the time, if it was determined that you caused the ball to move, you would just even address the ball, and the ball moved on the green, it was a penalty.
Right, yeah.
Which has obviously since changed. So I was over the ball, and the ball moved. Called this penalty on myself. And by the end of the round, this very attractive blonde showed up and watched. And then she showed up for the third round. And then she showed up for the fourth round. And keep in mind that they repair the groups after every round. And so the only common denominator from that second round was me. So I was like, oh, well, I mean,
there you go.
She must be here, you know, unless there's some really strange reason to watch me. And I have, you know, I have absolutely no game whatsoever when it comes time to the opposite sex. But I'm just hoping that, you know, she happens to like golfers. And so I went up and introduced myself, and she said, oh, you know, I just love golf. I'm my family's a member out of this course. And, you know, I'd love to go out and do some, you know, whatever. Let's go out for a night in the town. So that night I found out that the scorekeeper in our group that I had been chatting up was her grandma, and her grandma had put in a call after I had called this penalty on myself. And she said, hey, I'm out here volunteering at this Canadian Tour event, and there's this guy out here, and he hits the ball a long way, and he just called this penalty on himself, so I think he's pretty honest. He seems like a good guy. Why don't you come out and meet him? And she... I didn't know at the time, but is kind of the matriarch of the family. And when what grandma says goes,
I see that.
So
yeah.
I had earned the respect and been given the, you know, kind of the green light. So that was, you know, that was really all it took for her to kind of open up and trust me. And the relationship just kind of blossomed from there.
Nice. You're the honesty and you obliging by the rules of golf is what got you the nod there.
I mean, that's how I remember it. I don't know if my now wife would remember it the same way. Probably not, now that we have a 12-month-old who keeps us up most of the night, but,
yep.
All is well that ends well.
Love that. Awesome. Let's talk about where you kind of stand right now. Obviously, we're going through a big time mega season on the Korn Ferry Tour. I'm having struggles trying to remember when the season even started. It's a long one for sure. But for everyone to just kind of lay the land right now, tell everyone kind of what status you have, you know, where you sit and kind of what your game plan is as you look forward to the rest of the season.
So this season has been, like the last year for everybody, unprecedented, where they combined two years so that initially the thinking was if you didn't want to play last season early on due to COVID and the risk of traveling, you could seemingly not lose your status. That was theoretical, and it, you know, in hindsight, wouldn't have worked out. But because I didn't really play all that well last year when I did go on the road and take that risk, I still had status this year. So we had our first child in March, at kind of right as the pandemic was really becoming obvious to everybody.
And yes. Congrats on that. And congrats on the lovely timing too, as well.
yeah, exactly. Man, that's, we really know how to choose the time. You know, it's like, if you're going to have a child, it should be a joyous thing. And it has been overall, but it's come with, a lot of other factors. And last year trying to deal with being a first-time dad and the season and, you know, all the things that I needed to try to do to keep myself safe on the road and then come home to them. It just didn't lend itself very well to playing good golf.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
So I'm in the Q School category from the end of the 2019 season. And so they reshuffle every four events. And I'm on the kind of borderline of getting in every week. And because the PGA Tour went through a similar strangeness in their scheduling for the season, a lot of their players from the 125 plus category in the ranking are not getting into events. And so they're playing our events, and it's just more difficult to get into Korn Ferry events this season. Hmm. So I've been kind of borderline getting in or an alternate every event this season thus far. And it's led to some very strange last minute overnight trips through, you know, some dark places,
but yeah. Let's get to that. It's a great segue. Yeah. We've had some great guests on the podcast. You know, Ryan French, who runs the Monday Qualifier Info account, who's kind of headlined and highlighted the entire world of mini tours, Monday qualifiers, and who's getting into these tournaments. And we've talked with a lot of different pros as to where they stand. Let's do the basic explanation of kind of the alternates. You know, there are people like yourself that are just on the edge of these fields that just need a few things to kind of happen, whether that's a player pulling out of the tournament, having other commitments, getting into another tournament that allows you in. And I know you had a crazy scenario like this where there was a late night Wednesday night trip, I believe, to Louisiana. Just describe kind of what was going on there for our fans and how that all shaked out for you.
Yes. The first event of the season was in Sarasota, and something that had never happened in the history of professional golf happened where I was about Monday of the tournament week, 18th alternate.
Wow.
Or so. And I ended up getting down. I'm sorry. I'm confusing Louisiana with Sarasota, but in Sarasota, I was actually seventh alternate. I didn't think I was going to get in. Wednesday night came around. All the alternates that were ahead of me were on site. I thought, you know, there's never been a seventh alternate that's gotten in on a Thursday ever. So I'm going to go home, got my flight, jumped on a plane, got to Atlanta for my layover to Phoenix, and got a phone call at, you know, 8:35 or something. And it was like, hey, Mark, if you can be on the tee in 9 minutes, you're in the tournament. And I was just like, let me go talk to the pilot.
Yeah. Worst text ever.
Yeah, exactly. And so the next week, I figured everybody and their brother would be on site because essentially there wasn't an alternate on site, and that's why I got the call. Everyone had gone home thinking they weren't going to get in. Hayden Buckley, who was the very last player in the field, won the tournament. So he was an alternate. He got in the field last minute, won the tournament. And so that's when you talk about being on the razor's edge of getting in, making it, not making it. Every start is so vital. And it's demonstrated by Hayden winning as the last player in the field. And that changes a career. So when you get that call that, you know, your second alternate or you have the opportunity to get into the field, if you're just on site, you really need to be there at this stage. And so I was 18th alternate on Monday of Louisiana, and I had moved all the way down by Wednesday to about fifth alternate. And so, you know, I was on the borderline of, do I need to look at flights? Should I just, you know, I mean, still very unlikely as fifth alternate, fourth alternate that you're going to get in on into the tournament on Wednesday. So then I got all the way down to second alternate. And at that stage, given what had happened in Sarasota, I felt like I needed to go. And this was later in the evening here when I got down to second alternate. So essentially, I caught the last flight into New Orleans, and the tournament's in Lafayette,
which is not very close to New Orleans. For people who don't know,
it's not close to New Orleans. No, it's a good 2 hour drive. And as an alternate, you need to be there before the first tee time. We have COVID testing. We needed to test negative really before the first, you know, ideally before the first tee time, just in case anybody in those first times decides to pull out.
Got it.
So I get in, there were no rental cars. I had messaged my good buddy, glad you mentioned him, and shout out to Ryan French, because I described him in a way that it seemed like he was just, you know, an acquaintance, not a friend. His wife served me lasagna at the Evan Scholars Invitational this year. He caddied for me. He didn't take super kindly to that. And so let me just clarify this point that he went above and beyond to try to help and find me a ride because there were no rental cars anywhere to be found. It was spring break week in New Orleans. And I think this has been a trend this year that just finding rental cars is increasingly difficult. And so he had put out a tweet, you know, asking anybody and everybody if they would be willing or had any connection to someone who'd be willing to drive a random golfer who was an alternate in a Korn Ferry Tour event through the middle of the bayou at 1 a.m. And you know, needed to do it pronto.
Yeah, totally normal requests, I think.
Totally normal request. I'm going to be honest. I would have laughed my ass off if I had have seen that as somebody who lived, you know, in the greater New Orleans area. Just like I wouldn't do that for a complete stranger, pandemic times or not. Yeah. I mean, maybe I would, you know, given that I've gone through this now, but amazingly, there were people who were willing to do it. Now, the person who emerged as the leader in the clubhouse for the person who could drive me wanted an astronomical amount of money to do it. And it really, when you look at market rates, it was not too high above what Uber and Lyft would have charged had they have availability then. But mm-hmm. they also weren't available to make that trip through the bayou. So I end up taking after some negotiations with this random acquaintance of a follower of Ryan French on Monday, you know, from Monday Q Info, where it was like a back and forth. She wanted, you know, this amount of money. I decided to be bold and play my hand and try to negotiate it down.
Like she called my bluff. Wednesday night, huh?
Yeah. I mean, she knows exactly how few options there are for me. So she holds firm. I have to go back to her hat in hand with, you know what, look, you were right. I will pay you even more than you wanted originally just to show you, you know, in an act of contrition, how mistaken I was and how sorry I am. She didn't even reply. So I ended up taking two yellow cabs, all the way to the golf course to make it on site to get my COVID test. And this is I'm trying to be as abridged and concise as possible, but the long story short is that I didn't end up getting into the tournament, even though I made it on site. Once I got on site, the field never moved.
But you were there. You're giving yourself these at bats, and I appreciate the effort that was put forth to get there because karma's going to pay you back with one more of these opportunities one day.
You know, here's another thing that I didn't mention was one of the yellow cabs that I took, a woman was writing while she was driving. I mean, you know, you're used to seeing people text but she was actually writing in a journal, long form, just kind of stream of consciousness. And while I was somewhat delirious, I was interested in what she was writing. And she said that she just wrote as she felt inspired. It just happened to be that moment when I was in the back seat of her cab,
right,
heading to the golf tournament, that she felt inspired. So it was quite a talent. You know, I don't know that it was super safe, but I do know that for her to be able to write and it was cursive too, which she gets a lot of props for that.
Love that. Again, you can follow all these tidbits, these lovely stories of travel life on tour from Mark Baldwin. Again, he's Mark Baldwin One on Twitter. Let's spend the last few minutes of our conversation with just some rapid fire questions that I wanted to get the answers to for myself and for everyone else out there who is following or about to be. So you're at Mark Baldwin One, but there is also the Mark Baldwin Tracker on Twitter. My two-part question is, A, is that you? And B, if not, who's running that account?
You know, a great magician never reveals their secrets.
Ooh, okay.
So I can neither confirm nor deny it being an account, Mark Baldwin Tracker account run by Mark Baldwin. That would make all the sense in the world. I actually thought that there was some suspicion early on as to who it could be. let me go ahead and break down that fourth wall. It is not me. And I was very curious as to who it was. And for months and months last season, I didn't know. And the facade of not knowing who was behind the Oz curtain made it all the more intriguing.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
It's your biggest fan. I'm actually going to leave it like that.
I like that.
Because I know who it is. It is actually not, it's nobody who I thought it was. But it's, I like to leave it open and to, for it to continue to be an intriguing open-ended question.
I like that. Cool. You're balancing dad life right now. You've got all sorts of Wednesday night red eyes and crazy flights that you're taking. People are going to finally start doing a lot more traveling pretty soon. I know you do a ton of it. How about any secrets for falling asleep on a plane? You must have some luck sleeping on a plane because I know you're working with limited hours in the day.
I'm horrible at it.
Really?
I mean,
oh man,
I might be worse at falling asleep on a plane than I am at putting, which is really saying something. God,
I figured you'd be the one person to sneak an extra couple hours with all the experience you have. So, man,
I really do, because I've flown so much to Asia. I spent a lot of time playing in Asia, and there is the element of like extreme fatigue that hits you. But really, that's the only way I fall asleep, and it's still in short spurts. I'm kind of one who like patrols up and down the aisles, hangs out in the galley, and looks for interesting conversation.
Got it. Okay, cool. Let's throw a hypothetical your way. I asked this to a lot of pros who have been in a very similar position to you. I'm curious to see which way you go. If I could ask you right now, and keep in mind, you could pick all of the tournaments I'm about to mention. Would you rather have 5 guaranteed starts on the Korn Ferry right now or 1 guaranteed start on the PGA Tour right now? You can pick
one
course.
One on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, if I can pick the course. Which course do you think you might pick off the top of your head?
Boy, I'd have to think about that one a little bit. I mean, I would say TPC Scottsdale just because I'm out here and I play it so regularly and I like the course. But that's such a strong field. I think I would try to choose an event, you know, that doesn't have such a strong, you know, strong field, maybe an alternate field event. Something along those lines.
Like a Puerto Rico or a Corrales or something like that. Interesting.
Right, cool. Right.
And then the final question we like to ask our guests is our 19th hole question. When you get off a long day on the course, practicing, playing on a tournament, working on your game, what is your go-to choice for like a meal and a drink at the 19th hole?
I'm a Indian curry connoisseur.
Nice.
And so no 19th hole serves Indian curry, so I always have to go out and find, you know, some hole in the wall, and that's where just the very best Indian curries are. For a drink, I don't know, I've become kind of a wine guy, and I do enjoy a good glass of Pinot Noir. Previously, I've been more of like a whiskey, you know, whiskey drinker, but I've graduated, I think, from, you know, just getting a beer at the end of the round. And I don't think it's not to say that makes me in any way sophisticated. I think that's just what happens when you become a dad.
Yep. It's a natural progression indeed. Like that answer. Awesome. Hey, Mark, thank you so much for joining the Course of Life. Looking forward to following your journey on social media and getting you into more of those Korn Ferry fields so we can build your career and hit them straight out there. Okay.
Alex, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, and keep it rolling, huh?
That interview with Mark Baldwin is brought to you by our friends at Groovit Golf, makers of the Groovit Golf Brush. You've seen it on the bags of tour caddies and your favorite athletes and golf personalities on social media. And it's the brush to get for this now fully in swing 2021 golf season. This brush's patented pump sprays water or cleaning solution right onto the club face for you, making it quick and efficient to clean clubs or even your golf ball in seconds. The Groovit brush includes a detachable magnet so you can bring the brush to the club head. And the Groovit brush comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. That means if you can wear out the brush head cleaning golf clubs in 3 years, which we doubt severely, send it back and Groovit will get you a free replacement. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control the clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groove It, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It brush today with free shipping in the U.S. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It brush today. And we're back. Great interview with Mark Go 603 New Hampshire. That's the area
love
code.
Love that. Shout out to the 603. Nice.
And I'm looking forward to seeing if he can beat down Tony Romo this week.
Yes, that's going to be the ultimate experiment. So, yes, he's officially he's in the field in Arlington, Texas. It's at Texas Rangers Golf Club there in Arlington, just outside Dallas. So he's in the field, good to go. Doesn't have to worry about Wednesday night flight. No alternates. No one's going to get sick for him to be in. Mark's in, and so is Tony Romo. So obviously, I'm going to be head-to-head comparing the two of them all week on Twitter. So Tony Romo, if you throw up an 81-78 and you get housed by Mark Baldwin and all my friends in the Corn Ferry Tour, you best believe that you're gonna catch these tweets. So just know that in advance.
It's going to be great. And if you like that interview with Mark, plus everything else we do here on Course of Life podcast, subscribe, give us a 4-star rating, leave us a positive comment on the podcast app of your choice. Share this episode with a friend. Let them know that you think we're great. And if you don't want to do any of that and you think we suck,
donate to the first tee. That's
there you go. Yeah, donate to the first tee and get more golfers to come out and start podcasts that are better than ours.
Exactly. Perfect. Full circle. There you go. Nice work.
There you go. There we go. Let's talk some baseball. Let me first just say it's very early in the season. I'm not too concerned that the Yankees are the worst team in the American League.
Like your fans are throwing baseballs out on the field. What do you have to say about this? This is just
thankfully, there's not a lot of fans in the stands because of COVID, not because the team is kind of sucking because they can't hit. The pitching is still pretty good.
You're glad it wasn't more baseballs thrown out of the field. That's what you're going with as your excuse for that behavior there. I like that.
sure. I'm glad it's baseballs and not pizza because we are on like the 10-year anniversary of the pizza toss.
Thank you for Fenway. That was a great moment at Fenway Park as well. For that great pizza moment at Fenway. But yeah, Red Sox just still scorching hot. I can't believe this. Based on episode one of our baseball talk a few weeks ago, this is a complete 180. And now the Red Sox still have some of the hottest bats in baseball. I'm shocked right now. Like I can't believe that we're sitting here 2 weeks later and you're the one doing the slight backpedal.
I know. Thank you. Yeah, it's.
We'll play this roller coaster back and forth about 7 more times during the season. So
at least it's going to be a fun season, like it always is. Yeah. There's still 100 something games left, so we're good. Let's hashtag always end with food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends Toasty Snacks, Toasty Bites. We love them. Cashew, delicious. Coconut, almond, blueberry are my favorite. If you want a late night snack, you can go peanut, dark chocolate. But these are healthy course on the course or off the course snacks for the golfer or just anyone who wants to stay fit and have something good in their gym bag, their car, ready to go. Our promo code COL20 for 20% off. Again, toasty.com/COL. I said I've been waiting to do something for a really friggin' long time. I'm like literally,
it's
I'm,
been
I'm,
like
I'm clasping
14,
my hands
15 months.
Anticipation. Really?
Yeah, 14, 15 months. We're bookending this episode with COVID, I guess you could say, where we said at the beginning, we both now had the shots, so now it's time to enjoy the shots, right?
Yeah, and one of the things, like I put this big long list of things that I've been waiting to do together, and what appears to just be at the top are just lists of just like really simple, like not even really extravagant restaurants that I just want to go and just sit inside and eat at. And when I'm talking about my first indoor meal, because I'm going to do it this weekend in honor of my resurgence back into this world, it's just going to be a simple restaurant, Mike. It's going to be like a burger and fry and salad place where we can order an extra appetizer and we can order 3 refills on soda and we can ask for extra ketchup and ranch. You know, just like no inhibitions. Just like I'm here to sit in your comfy booth and get waited on for as long as possible. That's the one thing I miss.
I've been saying it for a while now that I will literally pay someone to bring me food and then take away the scraps and my plate. I will literally pay someone to do that.
Yes, that's called tipping. I'm going to tip extra too. I'm really excited to do that. So shout out to our people in the service industry that have just been through, I'll say it, just utter crap the past year. And I hope they're going to get out on the other side of it, those who have and still have their job. I'm coming back for you. I'm excited to get back inside restaurants, and I'll report back this weekend. But just really looking forward to just sinking into a booth. It's been too long. Mm.
So, are you going to drink some Pepsi Mango?
If I'm so lucky and it's on the menu. Mm.
That's true. We talked about it last week. You said that you were excited for Pepsi Mango. And yet it seems that I'm the one who's going to be tasting it first.
Yep, you are. You are the taste tester unofficially of the podcast. So with that, let's get a little ASMR moment going for our audience here. Well, one of the top 10 sounds on the planet, I would say, is the pop crack fizzle of a soda. So let's just, I'll leave the floor to you as you get ready to try.
Let's open the bottle first. Let me get that. Oh, yeah. And let's pour it out here. Let's see what we're getting with. Ooh, it smells fruity. It smells like mango.
That's the sound right there. We just drove some people nuts at home that are listening.
I know.
Right now.
Like,
everyone's running to the fridge for a soda now after hearing that. That's like the dog and the bell that they salivate over in the psychology experiments. Pavlov's bell. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, I'm ready to run to the fridge. But okay, so it's Pepsi Mango.
Pepsi Mango.
Your thoughts, as you said.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
What comes first, the Pepsi flavor or the mango flavor?
Well, you smell the mango as soon as I poured it, opened it up. You smell the mango. The first note you taste is Pepsi, but then it's immediately mango. It's very sweet. I haven't had non-diet soda in a long time.
Yeah. I figured, mango is my absolute number one drop dead favorite fruit in the world. However, mango drinks are tricky because the artificial mango flavoring they use usually is like a little bit on the artificially sweet side.
Well, they say this contains 1% juice.
Wow. A stunningly low count there.
1%. It's not bad. I don't think I would go out and get it because it's not diet. And I do prefer to save my calories for chocolate.
Yeah.
That's fair. So, or ice cream. So, but it's not bad. If you handed me this and said you have to drink this, I would drink this.
All right. I'm up next.
Without pushing back. So yeah, there you go.
Stuff. I appreciate that review, and our audience does as always. Thank you again for tuning into another great episode. We've got another one coming at you next week. Appreciate you joining the Course of Life, and we'll see you next week.